Hello and welcome to The Headquarters, the official podcast of Pension Plan Puppets. I am your host, Sean Woodley, and I'm joined today by fellow writers Harsh Devay and John Godis. Harsh, how you doing, man?
Wait, you said Pension Plan Puppets.
Yeah, I know. That's the world we're living in now.
Oh, I see. Okay, the Leafs are good. I got you. Sorry, I ruined your entrance, man.
That's okay. I didn't announce that it was coming or anything, so it's all good.
Yeah. This is all natural.
I didn't get it either.
Okay. Yeah. Well, whatever. It's
That's because John's from Winnipeg.
Well, that's true. It's been a while since we did one of these. We're rusty. It's been a long couple months. I think two of us have moved. Harsh, you're back in Mississauga now, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm in Hamilton. John went to Europe for like 2 months and saw a bunch of cool countries. John, what was the worst thing about Europe?
Yeah. The airports, probably. Yeah. I like the trains are awesome, and you should do the trains 100% of the time because a lot of the airports are just like a total mess.
Fair enough. I was hoping for something like some dirt on a country, but I guess not.
I could throw shade on Italy if you wanted me to.
Oh, what's wrong with Italy?
I just like Naples was like 80% like trash in the streets. Like it's like New York, but like 8 times worse. And like the streets are smaller. Like I literally walked on some streets there where there was like caged trash on either side of like a 4 foot wide street. And that's just how they live.
Wow. That's alarming. Yeah. That's not great.
Alienating our Naples listeners.
The Andrea Bargnani hive that tunes in to hear us talk about
Barks. Oh, no. Barks hive.
Yeah. Harsh, what's going on with you, man? You're in Mississauga now? What's going on back at home?
It's pretty good. I'll be home later now because of my job and stuff, so I'll be watching like basically the second half of games, which is... It's all right. I don't mind. First half doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah, no. If you talk to my grandparents, they just think you watched the last 5 minutes of a basketball game and you get the whole gist. So you're going to be one of those people now.
I'll be one of those people that rewatches games and shit. But whatever. It's all good. Good to have basketball back, though, man. It's I felt like the August is always rough, but then with the Blue Jays being complete trash,
yeah,
I didn't watch any baseball. Like I literally have watched one baseball game since May, maybe.
Yeah.
So I've basically just been like counting down the clock to the Raptors' game starting. So.
And there wasn't really like international basketball of importance either this season, and so yeah, it's been a long time. Happy to get it back going. Joel Embiid just scored like 20 points in 11 minutes on like 8 of 9 shooting, so that's fun for everybody. And things are picking back up. The Raptors have played their second to last preseason game. Their game against the Pistons last night was awesome. I guess we'll maybe dive into that. We'll talk, I guess, a bit about the preseason and what's going on, guys we like and guys we don't like that we've seen. The preseason is whatever, but it's been an interesting preseason by preseason standards for the Raptors, I suppose, with the changes going on. We'll dive into that. We'll answer a bunch of listener questions. We're going to dive into another episode sponsor, Bring Back the Old Segment. We'll play that random Raptors game. And a game, by the way, which has reached mainstream success. It's now a staple at trivia nights that I've done for Hoop Talks the last couple months, and I'm excited.
Humble brag.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so we'll do all that stuff, all the stuff you know and love about the show, and some of the stuff you know and hate, too. And, we'll be back in just a second to get things rolling here on The Headquarters. All right, welcome back to The Headquarters. Sean Woodley here with Harsh Devay and John Godis. I don't know. I've covered all the Raptors topics on Locked On Raptors incessantly over the last couple weeks, so I don't even know where to go. I'm not sure what's important anymore. I just kind of talked everything to death. So I'll throw it to you guys. Harsh, what's your number one sort of observation from the preseason thing that you've enjoyed watching over the first 4 preseason games?
Mostly, I guess, the fact that they're actually playing a different style.
Yeah.
Noticeably so. I don't know how long it'll last. I don't know if it's something that they can keep doing throughout the course of an 82-game season, but I am impressed that they're trying. I am impressed that something that's probably been bred into the system for 4 or 5 years now They've been able to break out of some of those habits, at least temporarily. So, and we have, the thing is, like, we have seen this happen in fleeting circumstances. Like, we've seen it for a week at a time, maybe 2 weeks at a time. But it is definitely good to see. And the fact that it's happening at the beginning of the season makes me think that they're making a concerted effort to do so. But we'll see whether it lasts. I am encouraged by the effort at the very least.
Yeah, I think the big question is whether or not they're going to kind of fall back on old habits if things go poorly. And, like, that road trip they have starting in the third game of the year where they go six games out west, like, if they lose a couple games on that trip, I feel like the Raptors are smart enough to not deviate if they're really trying to change things. But, I mean, I think I've seen crazier things before, and, like, if things go poorly and they're off to, like, a 1-4 start or something like that, like, maybe they try to just go back to what they know. But this also kind of suggests that the new system can't win over the course of time, and I think it can. And I think, you know, I feel like the conversation has kind of been, like, either they're going to do what they used to do and win a bunch of games, or they're going to try this new thing and maybe win fewer games. Like, I think they can win just as many games doing this new thing. It's going to be tough because I think the personnel is kind of limiting at times because there's just not that many good shooters on the team. And even, like, good passers are kind of scarce. There's more, I think, this season than there were last year who are going to be regular parts of the rotation. But I think that's still an issue. John, are you... Like, what would you say are the odds that, like, 2 weeks into the season we're still looking at the Raptors passing a ton and, like, racking up 25 assists and, like, shooting 30-plus threes a game? Like, do you think it's something that is going to be deviated from? I guess we don't know what's going on in the coaches' heads, but, like, it feels like they're really trying. I just feel like if the shots don't start falling more often, and they went 35% last night, which was fine, like, I think it will make sense to go back at least a little bit to what they've done. And, like, they don't have to go one way or the other either. They can kind of mix it in and have possessions where they go free-flowing and possessions where they've, you know, prioritized Kyle and DeMar. I don't know. This is not really a question anymore. It's just kind of a statement. But, like, are you what do you think is going to happen? Do you think they're going to end up deviating back?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question. I mean, once the you know, the typical guys who are the guys who hold the ball, like Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, play more minutes and have their presumed roles when the regular season gets going, I think that it'll fall back just naturally to a degree. But I am, like, 100% impressed, just like Harsh said, just at the fact that, you know, the personnel is exactly the same, but somehow they've gotten 100% buy-in on totally changing the style of play, which is really encouraging. It shows that there's no stubborn heads, that, you know, players like DeMar DeRozan are still willing to change their game. You know, he's been talking all preseason about how he wants to be the guy who makes the extra pass, who helps his teammates get better, and it's all talk and show until, you know, the regular season comes, but it's really good to just hear those things coming from him. So maybe if that's the way he expands his game this year, you know, he expands it every year, that would be a welcome sign for the team. So for me, I think it really rides on him more than Kyle Lowry. Lowry is obviously a better facilitator, and he, you know, the plus minus shows that when he's on the floor, the whole team is better. But DeRozan has to have that same kind of buy-in for a team play, just because those guys are going to be getting the majority of the minutes. And I think the third guy there, obviously, is Serge Ibaka. We saw more buy-in with him in the third game, and he had his best game of the preseason against Detroit last night. So the young guys obviously will play the system and move the ball really well, but it's just a question of whether the star players have that buy-in long-term.
I truly appreciate Serge's dedication to not giving a shit about the preseason. He was good last night, and he hit his shots, but, like, I don't think he was doing anything differently than he has been in the past. He was just hitting his shots that he was taking at earlier parts of the preseason and just missing. I'm fully on board with people who don't take the preseason seriously. That relates to me pretty well. Yeah, I think you're right that DeMar is kind of it's going to hinge on him, because Kyle is, like, a guy who I think he can fit into any offensive system, whereas DeMar, it's going to take more time, I think, to iron out those old habits and sort of encourage him to be more of a facilitator. And, like, the Raptors have talked about it. They want to have DeMar at, like, I think Casey said, like, if he averages 5 less points but 4 more assists, which would get him up to, like, 8 or 9 assists, like, that would be a good season for him and a good season for the Raptors, and would really sort of lead to that change that we're talking about with the offense. So I think DeMar, like, he's clearly bought into it. I think that's sort of a nice goal for him to shoot for if he wants to get a bunch of assists. And as a team, like, I think it's nice that they want to make that extra pass. At the same time, Dwayne Casey talked about this on Media Day too. Like, you can't go completely changing everything that's worked in the past, because they have had a lot of success in the regular season and to some extent in the playoffs in certain games here and there and in certain matchups, doing what they've done in the past. And like, there were times last night in the game against the Pistons where like it got to the point where they were just overpassing. Like Norm Powell passed up an open three for a DeMar corner three, and it's like, you don't need to do that. Like, if you want to take that three, Norm, go ahead. So I do feel like there's got to be a balancing act where they got to try to incorporate elements of what they used to do in with the new stuff. But I like what I've seen so far. One of the things that I really like has been Jonas Valanciunas, and not so much just like him not looking completely lost out there. It's the fact that they're using him differently, I think. Like, they're not so much just throwing it to him in the post and saying, all right, dude, just like go get a bucket. Like, they're actually kind of incorporating him more as like a really high screener and then having him do stuff on the roll. I think that's where he's more effective. He's not good as post player because he's so one-dimensional there, and the JV Hive's going to come screaming at this. Poor Sahal Abdi, man. God, first post for Raptors Republic gets eviscerated by the comments on Raptors Republic, but it's besides the point. I like that they're using him as a role man. I think that if they can sort of deviate away from him being a post guy and like limit those touches that just don't really fit in the offense, I think that's going to be a good thing. Harsh, thoughts on Jonas, his improved passing, quote-unquote improved with dick fingers. Like, do you think that's real? Like, what are you thinking of Jonas in the preseason so far?
He's looked good. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's looked good in preseason. But I don't know, man. I'm not trying to sound negative, but like, he's done this against the Pistons before. Like,
Clippers, by the way. Three of the four teams are teams that he normally plays well against.
Yeah, I mean, look, the season opener, he dropped 35 on, or whatever, 30-something on the Pistons. Like, yeah. He generally does well against these teams.
Yeah.
Again, another like, all four teams that they've played so far are guys with, you know, the big bruising center types, like, not really the ones that are going to stretch the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's fine. He's fine. He has a purpose in this system and on this team. Like, you need one guy who can give you a reliable 25 minutes where he's going to grab, pretty much clean up the glass and give you some efficient scoring in the paint and even a little bit outside the paint. It's fine. Like, he's fine. The shooting, the passing, I don't know.
It was mostly one game where he kind of flashed it. It's been it hasn't been awful the other games, but it was mostly that first game.
I mean, the thing is, like, you can't change who he is. Like, his DNA as an NBA player is still the same. Like, he's not a guy who's suddenly going to turn into Marc Gasol in terms of his passing in the paint.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if he improves to a level where he's not a complete black hole, like, that's an improvement. Like, he just needs to make reads when he's seeing double teams or when he sees an open man in the corner, like, make the simple read. Like, that's already a step above what we've seen from him in the past. So, you know, I don't have ridiculously high expectations. Like, he doesn't need to become the post creator like that some of these modern bigs are. Like, he doesn't need to be a Draymond, Marc Gasol type. All he needs to do is just make the simple pass and, you know, pass out of double teams. And, you know, maybe he can do that as he gets older.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Be a step up. Yeah, I feel like if, like, the performances he had in, like, a couple of the preseason games took place in, say, the middle of January in a game against the Pistons or another team he normally plays well against, like, we wouldn't really think much of it. We'd be like, okay, that's a nice game from him, but, like, that's not really going to change much in terms of his outlook. So, yeah, I'm kind of going to be apprehensive about it until, like, if he comes out of the gate and has, like, 2 or 3 weeks where he's playing, making smart passes on the roll, and, I mean, the offense is always going to be there with him. He's an efficient scorer and whatever. Like, the real question with him is, like, the pick-and-roll defense. That's always been the problem. That's always been the reason he's not played late in games. It's not, you know, it's not because he's a bad offensive player that he's not playing late. It's just he can't stop anybody. So, John, has there been anything on defense that has been encouraging for you from Jonas, or has it just been kind of much of the same, or just, like, not really any sort of context within which to, you know, kind of evaluate his growth?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, and you questioned me perfectly there. I think it's just
that was due.
In the preseason, teams are kind of just going through their core sets, and typically when teams go up against the Raptors in the regular season or with any sort of preparation, they know to go at Jonas. And from what I've seen, I haven't seen any team make a deliberate effort at, like, going at him. And again, the most positive game that people are have fresh in their minds the Detroit game. And once again, Jonas kills Detroit every time they play. So there is a bit of bias there. I mean, he looks agile. He's not at the level, I think, that we saw in the 2016 playoffs, I think, if I have that year right. And I don't know. Like, you have to prove it. And I think the defense thing is going to be his biggest problem. He can make the extra pass, but I think the net loss of his defense is not being made up by one or two assists where he gets the ball to the corner. I think the offense will do that regardless of whether he makes that extra pass. That's just where I kind of stand on it.
See, like, with Jonas, I feel like it's easy to get into this pattern of dissing Jonas, because like Jonas is very polarizing and his deficiencies are very clear and very obvious. Like, yeah, he's not a great defensive player. And just one thing to keep in mind too is that the one game where the Raptors looked horrible defensively, and it's not all his fault, like and they look bad against the Portland Trailblazers, where the two ball handlers are, you know, magical offensively. Whereas against the Clippers, you know, Patrick Beverley's not going to hurt you on a pick and roll. Like, Reggie Jackson is, you know, good on the pick and roll, but he's not a great player overall. Like, that's not a team that's...
And Drummond doesn't give a shit either.
Exactly. Drummond isn't a guy that you have to sort of follow all the way out to the perimeter. Like, he's not somebody you worry about all that much. So he can sort of have tunnel vision defensively, and it's all right.
Mm-hmm.
When the opposition sort of takes another level up and it becomes a little more difficult, you'll see those same issues pop up, I imagine. Like, I don't think he's going to become a drastically different player. And that's not to say that what the player that he is a bad player. I'm just saying that I don't have any reason to have optimism that he is a changed player. Like, he is who he is, and that's perfectly fine within the context of what the Raptors are trying to do. It's just, you know, if your expectations have changed based on these four games, you're probably going to be disappointed 15 games in.
Or that he's going to close games. I think that's still kind of off the table until we see something more, like you said.
Yeah, I think the only way he ends up closing games is if, like, they can't find a reliable guy to play the four next to Serge, and they just kind of have to do it, just by default, because they can't trust. Like, maybe the Miles thing works for some matchups, but not against all of them. And like, they'll just have to shoehorn Valanciunas and Serge to finish games. That's kind of the only way I see it happening.
Yeah,
honestly, I might be crazy for this, but I would be shocked if they didn't even play, if they didn't try to play someone like Poeltl ahead of Jonas to close games.
Yeah, I'm totally for that as well for the defense.
Like, it's not like, I just think Casey values mobility and somebody who can switch and, you know, cover a lot of ground defensively when you're in a scrambling type situation, and that's just the type of defense that he has, and Jonas doesn't exactly fit that, whereas Poeltl is really, really quick across the floor, and I think that's something that he would, if he plays like a big lineup, like a traditional big lineup, I think he'd play Poeltl at the five ahead of Jonas still. That's just my gut feel. I may totally be wrong.
Yeah, because Poeltl can kind of be like the, in essence, the four in that situation. It keeps
exactly,
Serge at the rim.
Yeah.
The real litmus test is going to come Friday against the Bulls in the final preseason game with Lauri Markkanen, of course. That will be the determining factor as to whether or not Jonas is good at defense now or not. So
they'll still win.
And then they have him at the opening game of the season as well, so that'll be...
Mirotić and Markkanen, dog, they're going to drop like 40 points each.
McBuckets is on the Knicks now, so at least he's not... He's back in the East, but he's not on the Bulls.
Doesn't matter. Thankfully. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. But it's just a side note. Is there a more miserable player on Earth to watch than Andre Drummond? Like, fuck, I hate watching him play basketball.
Yeah, it's like him and Dwight Howard are 1 and 1A.
Yeah, it's just...
At least Dwight Howard had that, like...
he was good at one point.
Yeah, that, and he had the full court spin move dunk thing.
Yeah.
Like, was... 5 minutes after he airballed a free throw. I feel so bad for Charlotte, because I feel more bad for him, because I think Cody Zeller's going to have his job in, like, five games into the season.
Well, like, they were, like, 3-17 without Zeller last year, so he should probably play quite a bit. He's their Patrick Patterson.
I just feel like everything about the Pistons is so dire. Like,
oh, I hate it all. I hate it
their
all.
Their players, like Tobias Harris and Reggie Jackson and shit, down to their jerseys and their court. It's just all bad. It's just all bad.
Yeah.
It's depressing.
The fact that they are one of the lone teams that has a GM coach combo still, they should probably
split that up. When are they moving into Little Caesars?
This year.
Oh, that's even more depressing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
the shittiest pizza for the shittiest team.
How about their deep dish, though? Man, it's,
have you had it?
No, actually, I have had it before. It's ass. It's just thick, regular pizza. It's not deep dish at all.
I wanted to go down that road because you see the ads and you wonder, and then you remember it's Little Caesars.
Yeah, I mean, I've had I won't lie. I'll mess with the Little Caesars once in a while just because it's cheap and there, but that's about it. Is there a more degrading job than the dude who has to swing around the sign outside of Little Caesars? Do you guys have that where you guys live? Yeah. Yeah.
That's not great.
I had a friend who did that once, and he just loathed it. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know. You could also play
for shout out to you if you have to do that, though.
Yeah, you could also play for the Detroit Pistons, which it's also a pretty awful job. Because, God, that's terrible. Anyway, or cover the Detroit Pistons, that poor bastards who have to do that. What were we talking about? The power forward spot. We were talking about maybe Poeltl plays there. Another guy who could potentially squeeze in there by the end of the season. This is called a segue. OG Anunoby played last night, and he was, kind of fun. He didn't, he doesn't look very good on offense just yet, but passing, he was pretty nice, and he didn't really get the chance to play much defense because the Pistons suck, but... harsh impressions on OG's first game, and more, I guess, in a larger scale. What do you think, now that he's actually playing and it seems like he's going to be ready for the start of the season, what are your expectations for what his role is going to be by, say, season's end?
Yeah, it's hard to say definitively what his role is going to be. I don't know if Casey's going to, just by seniority, trust Pascal Siakam to get the 4 minutes ahead of him. I don't know what the plan is for that. I could potentially see a scenario where it's like how he used Jakob Poeltl last year, where he kind of had to wait his turn.
Right.
Just because Bebe got the first shot at the backup minutes, and you kind of see how it goes from there. I could see that kind of a thing happen. But in terms of how I view his game at this point, I'm optimistic. I think he's one of the few natural fours that they have. Right. Especially given the way that the league has gone, that you don't really need those 6'10 lumbering guys who play kind of at the elbow. You don't need a guy like that. He's probably far stronger than somebody like Siakam. Siakam can probably give you more in transition, but considering how OG's defensive ability has been touted, I imagine halfway through the season, he can probably give you some minutes there, probably give you some energy there. I think when you consider the fact that, A, there are a couple of guys ahead of him in terms of seniority in the pecking order, and the fact that he's coming back from injury, I don't think you'll see much of him to start the season, but maybe midway through the season when he's up to speed. And I think that the four spot is going to be an issue. I just don't think they have the depth there. Once those issues start coming to light, I think you could start seeing him grab some minutes there, maybe 10 minutes off the bench, something like that.
Yeah, I think there's going to be an opening for a lot of dudes to grab minutes there. I feel like Alphonso McKinney might have a shot to grab some minutes at the four.
That's a good shot too. I think a lot of guys, even Bruno, if he hadn't looked like complete shit in the preseason, might have had a shot.
I think we have Bruno questions. We either have Bruno questions or we don't, because people are just too out on him, so they didn't even bother asking. I haven't checked, but
out.
Yeah, no, OG, I think they seem pretty high on him. They seem like they're gonna play him if he's healthy and stuff. They seem pretty happy about it. So yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if by season's end, it's a lot to ask of a rookie to be good on defense. We saw last year Pascal Siakam was energetic and athletic, but also just completely shitty at defense. We might see that with OG too. And that's fine for a rookie, but I don't know, if you're looking for a solution at that four spot, it's going to be very fluid. They're going to go big sometimes. Serge is probably going to play a lot at the four just because they have to, just because he's the best guy there by far in terms of just guys who are skilled, even though he's better as a center. I think we're going to see a lot of that small unit with Miles at the four, with Powell and DeRozan on the wings. It's just, it's a matter of if the matchups will, you know, allow for it. I think against like the best teams in the East, we're going to see that setup because like the Celtics, the Wizards, even the Bucks, the Cavs, like they're all going to play pretty small most of the time. So I think you can probably get away with it. And like my thing with this too, if you're going to go with that small unit, and this is getting away from OG, but while it's on my mind, like my thing with that small unit is people will be like, oh, it's bad for rebounding or whatever. But for me, it seems like the perfect time for like. The big criticism of like Dwayne Casey has been that he's not proactive enough and doesn't sort of throw the action at the other team and make them react kind of thing, where if you throw that lineup out there, that is doing exactly that. That's throwing something weird out there that's forcing the other team to have to adjust to it because it's going to be so athletic and fast and shooty and able to switch. So I think that could be like a really nice look for the Raptors. So maybe this four issue won't be quite as big an issue as we're talking about, but yeah, I think there's going to be an opportunity there for some minutes if they need a bigger, sort of more defensive-y presence there. I think OG kind of fits the bill, physically at least, to get in there. I'm kind of high on Siakam, too. I think two of my favorite plays so far the preseason have been him running a fast break. He's so goddamn fast. It's awesome. But, yeah, I don't know. John, OG thoughts. Go. This is a worse, this is a worse question than the one I set you up for before.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you.
I'll just go.
You hadn't talked in a while, so I just wanted to let you in.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I was just surprised. You know, I hadn't seen him play. I didn't watch any college tape, and I was just psyched because everybody else was psyched. Sorry.
Well, aren't you studious?
The kid is just like a really big kid, like, and he's gonna fill out. As he gets older too, and I just love him as a player, just watching him. He knows where to be defensively. He has confidence on offense, though not a lot of game right now. And I think he, you know, it's great that he's back so early, and I think a rotation spot is his to lose at this point. What the small lineup looks like, I think we hit on it earlier. I think Poeltl's going to be the first option for four because he is so reliable. Siakam has shown signs of being somebody you could swing the ball to, and he could hit a 18-20 foot jump shot with some regularity. Rebounding, I think, will be an issue, but that's Jonas Valanciunas is still here. That's going to be a big part of his role too. So, yeah, I like that they have all these options at the three with all these small guys. They can change the small lineups up. They can experiment. And even if they're not winning too many games, if things kind of get off to a moderate start, at least you feel like if everybody stays healthy that they're going to figure out something workable, that they can't not figure out something workable just based on how much talent is here.
Yeah, I think the important thing... Sorry, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just saying, like, I think it's cool that they have... They definitely have 12 super playable guys in all different situations. The last three being McKinney, Bruno, and I guess maybe KJ McDaniels or an open roster spot, whatever they end up
doing. KJ's not making the team.
That's what I don't think so either.
He's trash.
He's here right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it's cool that they have so many guys that they can throw in. Like any of those 12 guys I could see playing a role and fitting into a rotation. And I think it will be pretty fluid. Like there could be nights where you'll see 2 point guard lineups with Van Vliet and Wright, or, you know, maybe in some weird situation you'll see Lowry, Van Vliet, and Wright as well. Like, I don't know. Like, they could do a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And a lot of these guys are, you know, flexible positionally, like between the two and the three, or one, two, and three in some cases for DeLon Wright, or the three and the four and the five. There's a lot of these guys can play different positions. So Dwayne Casey has a lot of different tools at his disposal. It's, you know, I think, and he can't really go wrong because I think a lot of these guys are competent NBA players. So, yeah, I think they're in a good spot. Like, the depth on this team is pretty considerable.
Yeah, I think...
My one thing, just to put something in, is that how many of these young guys are going to be really good and really ready to play if they're only playing 10, 15 minutes a night? So hopefully the experimentation works, but that's why I say that they might lose some games in the meantime, because I'm not sure how many of these guys are going to play, you know, really well right off the bench if they're only playing limited minutes.
Yeah, I think, like, if you look at the complexion of the team, this is important for fans to keep in mind, like, the complexion of the team is going to look entirely different at the end of the season than it is at the start, because you look at it right now, and there's, like, probably six guys you can pencil in to be like absolutely steady. Probably if you want to throw in DeLon, maybe you can do that too. I think his offensive issues are kind of a thing to keep in mind, but not in terms of playmaking, but finishing, he just doesn't really seem to have any sort of scoring ability at all. So that could be a problem. So I would say there's like six guys that you can pencil in to be like, okay, we know what these guys are going to give. Maybe Norm has a bit more upside than what we're penciling in. I think he's going to be solid at least. And then after DeLon, it's kind of murky. Is Jakob Poeltl like going to be able to do more than he did last year as like a really sort of sparingly used backup center? Is Siakam going to be able to like refine himself to the point where he's useful and not just sort of jumping all over the place and picking up fouls and getting out of position? Like there are probably, you know, between seven, eight, or nine guys on the team who are like, you're not exactly sure what they're going to be. And you might, if you're just sort of laying out a spreadsheet, if you have the guys who are you're confident in green and you have all the other ones in red, like I feel like by the end of the season, it's going to be a lot more green than red, but we don't know who it's going to be just yet. And like there will be certain things that happen and injuries and situations that allow guys to move into roles. And so, yeah, I think the sort of setup of the bench unit is going to be a lot different by the end of the season. The sort of amount of trust you have in these kind of guys is going to be very different by the end of the season. And I do, like, I'm totally with you, Harsh. I think it's a good thing. Like, they're deep. They have the ability to be like, really deep by the end of the season if guys develop the way I think we're hoping they're going to. And it's not a bad thing that Dwayne Casey gets to sort of be imaginative with all these rotations and sort of just throwing shit at the wall and seeing what works. Like, and I'm with you too, John. Like, if it means a few extra losses, like, that's totally fine. They're locked in now. This season doesn't have to be about winning 50-something games and, you know, guaranteeing yourself an easy pass to the conference finals. Like, if this
year... Well, some people say it is.
Yeah, well, those people are idiots. Like, if you're looking at this three-year window, 2018-19 is always going to be the year where they kind of are ideally kind of hitting their stride with all the young guys in concert with the old guys still in their primes. This year, I think, is about setting up for next season. And if you end up with 50-something wins and a good playoff run in the meantime, which I think is very possible, that's just bonus for me. Like I think the floor of this team is good enough that they're probably going to be a second-round team anyway. And if anything on top of that is gravy, and anything on top of that is just setting up for much higher expectations next year. And I think that's cool. This is a good time. I like the depth. OG's fun. There's lots of interesting guys. There's some good way. There are ways where it could go off the rails. There's not any shooting really on the team. It's like you could make the argument that Fred VanVleet's like the fourth best shooter on the team, but I don't know. I'm pretty excited about it all. Do you guys want to get to some questions though?
Sure.
Okay. Let's get into those. First one here from Asad Alvi, Harsh Dave antagonist on Twitter. Is CJ Miles the greatest non-Vince small forward in Raptors history? Harsh.
I'm pretty sure that's tongue-in-cheek, but...
It might, yeah, I think it is too, but I mean...
It's definitely tongue-in-cheek. Yeah. I mean, we had goddamn Tracy McGrady, man.
That's true. That is true. Anthony Parker was also like very good.
Eat Tracy McGrady, it's probably true, though.
Yeah. Anthony Parker was really good for a couple years.
Antoine Wright.
Oh, baby.
Garbo.
Julian Wright.
Yeah, I think CJ Miles is pretty good. I don't know how much better he'll be than Terrence Ross. But he did show, like, I feel like I didn't know CJ Miles had this much game off the bounce. Like, that's pretty
good. That's going to be handy.
Major league shade. I know Sean loves Terrence Ross, but
I'm currently looking at a picture of him framed above my desk. So, yeah. But no, he was more of a shooting guard, so he's not in this conversation, thankfully.
Out of it.
Yeah, Miles is fun, man. He was really good last night. The off the dribble stuff, I think, is a bonus. I'm not sure he'll do that all the time, but that was the behind the back shit to DeLon. I think that was DeLon's first career dunk too. That's probably not true, but I didn't think he could dunk. I don't know. I wasn't sure if he like had the ability to jump or not.
He dunked last year.
Yeah, I don't really remember that, but he can dunk now. Apparently, proof of after that CJ Miles behind the back pass on the break. That was fun. CJ Miles is going to be good, man. He's just, it's nice to have a dude you just know is going to hit threes. It's very, very nice. It's comforting for sure after having Patrick Patterson and even PJ Tucker, who would hit threes, but his foot would be on the fucking line. So, next question from also Asad Alvi. Higher 3-point percentage at the end of the season, JV or DeMar? John, you go first. Ooh. On this one.
Probably DeMar. But
yeah, I'm going to go DeMar.
obviously this is a joke, but it's a little more interesting because your like volume's gonna be way different. But I'm gonna go DeMar.
JV's gonna go like 2 for 4 and win. Yeah, I don't want him taking threes at all. It's dumb. Like, what's the utility of it? He's not spacing the floor when he does it. You saw last night, Andre Drummond just stood under the basket. You're not spacing the floor at all. He's not making passes out of that. He's not putting the ball on the floor to attack closeouts. Why is he out there? Just don't do that. But
gotta make the three, Jack.
Jack was killing me last night, man. That crack he made about his son. My son plays hockey at Vanderbilt, but he's a hack. Oh, just what a treasure. Next one here. From Lumo23. He changed his name from VTech Poppy to Wheezy F Bebe, which is fine, but it's not VTech Poppy.
You'll always be VTech Poppy to me.
Always. Yeah. Guesses on what the Raptors' 3-point percentage from three, that's a redundancy, is by the end of the season. Harsh, you go first.
What was it last year?
I want to say, like every other team, they were probably like 37%. Like, I don't know. I
could that seems high.
I'm going to go to the franchise index and look it up. Okay.
Okay.
This does not have 3-point stats. Sorry.
All right.
What a letdown. Okay, here we go.
36%.
Okay.
Yes, 36 and 37 the year before.
Okay. Every team's kind of in the same boat, unless you're really shitty.
Or the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, well, they're in a different league. It's different.
Okay, what did Houston shoot, though? Because it's going to be, like, that kind of volume.
Yeah, and, like, they didn't have a lot of, like, knockdown shooters, right? It was a lot of pretty good shooters. I think it'll be something like, I think the probably 40% from Lowry, like the 42 that I'm expecting from Miles and like the 39 from Serge will be a nice sort of way to prop up the rest of the class.
The last year, the Raptors were 13th in the league at 36%.
So Houston last year shot 36% as well, but they shot 1,400 more threes. That was obviously the highest in the league. So the Raptors shot just under 2,000 and Houston shot 3,300. So I would say that it's going to be around the same, but I think the Raptors are going to shoot 2,600 threes this year.
All right. And how many will they – you think 36%?
No, actually. If they're going to shoot that many, I'm going to say 30%.
What was the lowest in the league last year?
32%.
Yeah, they're not going to be 30.
Yeah, 32.
I would say like they'll shoot 2,500 and they'll hit 35.5%.
Yeah, it sounds about right. Something like that.
Yeah. Next question, also from Lilmo23. Is Harsh actually corny? John?
No.
Yeah, no, Harsh, you're not corny.
Thanks, man.
Those bastards on... What is wrong with Raptors Republic comment sections, man? That is dark internet.
That's like our Reddit.
I don't.
Yo, really... I got dissed on Reddit too this week.
Really?
Oh no, we have Reddit too.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
I got dissed on Reddit for the r/Toronto Raptors.
My God.
Two straight days.
I don't think I've ever looked myself up on Reddit before.
I didn't look myself up. Fucking Will found it, and I was like, "Yo, what the fuck? I'm getting dissed on Reddit again." Like, yo, people think I'm like trying to be funny. Like, yo, this is just how I am. This is how I talk. Like, there's no lies here, man. Vouch for me, Sean. You've met me.
Yeah, you're all right. You're fine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. No.
Okay,
Harsh,
I'll take that.
Harsh, you're good people. We're like
online listeners. Please stop being mean to me, man. This is I'm a nice guy. I promise.
Leave Harsh alone, man.
Oh man. Whereabouts in Mississauga do you live now, Harsh?
Yeah, I live on North Mississauga, so the Brampton-Mississauga border.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm not too far from you. I'm in Hamilton now. It's not that far.
Well, I see that that disgusting town every day.
Brampton?
Brampton.
I had to work in Brampton yesterday. It was...
Yeah, Brampton's not bad. I'm just talking shit.
It was fine.
It's just a rival.
I won't make the Brampton people angry.
No.
Yeah, I worked in Mississauga a couple days before that, and I preferred Mississauga. I will say that. This might be pandering to you. I'm not sure.
No, I'm on to you. I see through it.
All right, moving on. Next question from Gorilla Antagonist at Sacred_Blue1. I've never seen a question from this person before. Do we bring CJ off the bench so he can achieve GOAT Sixth Man of the Year status? I'm bored of the CJ Norm starter bench debate, I gotta say. I don't think it really matters. I think they're gonna be fine either way.
John, I agree.
Okay.
I think that Powell's gonna start, though.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think last night was kind of a dress rehearsal-y type thing. And, yeah, I'm okay with that. CJ off the bench is fine. They're both gonna play, like, 28 to 30 minutes. It's gonna be fine. So, I don't think it matters. Harsh,
yeah.
Do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think CJ makes a lot of sense as a bench player, just because, like, on the bench unit, when DeLon Wright's playing and he can't really space the floor, it's nice to have a guy on the perimeter that can reliably hit shots.
Yeah,
and I think by that same token, I think for the starting lineup, that's where Norm fits a lot better, I think, because he can attack off of the chaos that DeMar and Kyle create.
Yeah.
So it's just the best role for both of them, but I think both of them are going to play like massive minutes either way, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. Next one is that's one more ahead. This one from Greg at Greg DS Parker. How many Norm poster dunks should we expect this year? I'm hoping for a compilation of Norm dunking on every team. If we're going on like a per 36 basis, how many Norm poster dunks should we expect, John?
I feel like Norm doesn't even dunk on dudes, man. It's like he moves too fast for people to actually attempt to block his shot.
Anthony Davis disagrees.
I want to see Norm make two difficult layups per 36 minutes.
He dunks
Super Bowl, but when the dunk isn't there, when he changes at the rim to something else, it's just a nightmare right now.
Look, I don't even want to
like
see
a floater, two floaters for him. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Look,
he's got to be a better finisher because he's so good at getting to the rim. Like that's the next thing for me. Like if he's gonna take the next step, I think that's big.
I don't know. I would just prefer like two righty finishes, just easy righty finishes. That'd be nice too. Just anything other than the left. I just sent you the video of Norm dunking on Anthony Davis, Harsh, in case you forgot.
Oh, thanks. I'm gonna play that while we're on air.
Yeah, I remember this.
That was a good ass dunk.
You know who else remembers getting dunked on by Norm?
Who?
JV.
That happened in the perfect scrimmage, right?
Headband Damari Carroll.
Oh man, that's gonna.
I can hear Matt Devlin like screaming and like.
Yeah.
Low volume.
Screaming CJ kilometers into the microphone until he dies.
Oh god.
All right, next one. This is specifically geared towards Harsh. Harsh, which hairdo does JV have to rock to score highest on Harsh's handsomeness scale?
You see, like, I feel like what he has going on right now is, like, it has some boyish charm to it.
Yeah.
Like, the messy top.
If the fucking Nazis hadn't ruined it, that haircut, I might agree, but it's pretty much the Richard Spencer.
The Nazi thing is the Hayward thing.
Yeah, the slick with the no beard is
that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
Apologies to JV.
Just watch the Celtics, then all the white guys have the MAGA haircut.
Yeah, exactly. The MAGA haircut. Yeah. So I think what JV has right now has some charm to it, but I still think his ultimate destiny is just to look like he doesn't need to look handsome. Like, just shave your goddamn head, go with the buzzed cut. There's like that there's these shavers that I've seen on like infomercials. Don't ask me why I was watching infomercials, all right? Just go with it.
Shout out to the Magic Bullet.
Exactly. So there was like this round circular shaving device, and it's basically like every morning you can just run it through your head like three times.
It's like a Roomba for your head, essentially.
Exactly. It's a Roomba for your head, and you get a nice flat 0.5 shave. Just go all out looking like an East European bouncer. That's his destiny, man. He has to... He just has to go the intimidation route. He doesn't need to look handsome. I don't want a handsome center. I don't want it.
Yeah, like Marching Gortat. He's really good. He's also ugly as shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like
scary, too. That's the way it works.
Yeah, exactly.
We can't have a handsome 4-5 combination in Ibaka and JV. Like, that's what kind of a handsome teams don't win like that.
You're right? Not deterring anyone from going to the rim with that as your guys down low.
Exactly.
At all.
Exactly.
Are you putting out the handsomeness scale again this year, Harsh? Because that was a treat last year.
I want to. People want it, man, but I don't know if I'll do it. I put out the feelers, and everyone's like, yes, I need to see it. I'm like, whoa, man. This is.
Wasn't expecting that?
I guess I kind of was. I was just milking the attention, really. But, I mean, maybe I'll do it.
All right. Well, now you have to do it. You're beholden to this now. Next one from Lovers of Atlantis at Girls Who Knows. My least favorite handle because it doesn't make grammatical sense. Also, this person has Dart Guy as their picture, which just upsets me.
Can you read that again? Can you read the name again?
Lovers of Atlantis is the name. It's at Girls Who Knows. It really,
what the fuck?
Just like it stresses me out.
Oh no, he's got the Dart Guy as his picture.
Yeah, I just said that. Thanks for listening.
Sorry, I was too obsessed with the Lovers of Atlantis part.
Yeah. Good flick, Atlantis. That's a movie, right? It's a the Disney cartoon, right?
It was a good movie, actually.
Yeah.
If he's talking about the movie, I endorse it. Actually, the place too, because who doesn't love a mystical land below the sea?
It's no Treasure Planet, though. Treasure Planet is the shit. It's a good ass movie.
I thought that was the same movie for a long time. Now I'm questioning if I've seen Atlantis. Treasure Planet.
I do think there's like an underwater sequence in Treasure Planet on like an underwater planet kind of thing. So that might be. Oh no, eh? No, I think the underwater thing is Atlantis. I don't know. I might go watch both tonight just to confirm that they're different movies.
Yeah, good idea.
The question from at Girls Who Knows, which again, just stop. Is the bench plus Lowry going to be effective despite the loss of Patrick Patterson? Who do you envision closing games? We kind of talked about the second one. I don't think the bench is going to be like plus 15 per 100 possessions like it has been in the past, just because it seemed to fit so perfectly back when you had Patterson and even like Biombo a couple of years ago, and Corey Joseph was really reliable, and Terrence Ross, like you underplay the sort of loss of him in that unit as well, because it wasn't really the bench unit after he was out last year, after he was traded. I mean, there was the Lowry injury too, but that's besides the point. I think it was at the Hoop Talks thing, Blake did a one-on-one with Keith Boyarski from the Raptors analytics team, and they were talking about the Lowry in the bench unit, and Blake kind of asked, why is it so good, or why it hasn't been so good, and Keith was just like, Kyle's really good. That was his answer, and I think Kyle's probably going to lift those guys up again. Like,
I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, the first thing that you said, like, this line of questioning is, like, it drives me insane, because Patrick Patterson is, like, 8-5, and he was fucking terrible towards the end of last season, like, and now everyone wants to talk about him like he's a signing of the summer. Like, what are we really talking about here, man? Like, you just mentioned how many different pieces have changed. Like, whether it's Corey Joseph or DeLon Wright, doesn't matter. Whether it's Terrence Ross or whoever replaces Terrence Ross, it doesn't matter. No matter what's happened, the bench unit has been good. You know why? It's because Kyle Lowry is fucking amazing at basketball. Like, that's all it comes down to me. As long as we have Kyle Lowry going against opposing bench units, I'm cool with it. Because Kyle Lowry is like, every single unit Kyle Lowry is a part of generally ends up being a net positive. So as long as Lowry's playing, like, there's a reason why it's Lowry plus bench and not Lowry and Patterson plus other bench parts.
Patterson plus a starter and some bench dudes is actually the lineup.
Yes, please respect Kyle Lowry for what he is, man. And please do not equate the value of Kyle Lowry and Patrick Patterson.
I feel really bad now for at Girls Who Knows, because we've kind of eviscerated everything about this question.
It's not just this person. It's like it's something that, and it's not just Raptors fans. It's like people around the league like keep talking about the loss of Patrick Patterson, and it's like no, that to me the loss of Patrick Patterson only hurts because they don't really have a competent replacement ready.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so much about Patterson. It's the fact that they don't really have like a Dante Cunningham type to replace him.
Okay. What's with the want of Dante Cunningham? Like, he's not good. Like, why do people want him?
He's probably better than Pascal Siakam.
I guess, but like he would just add the same issues the Raptors have in that they don't have any shooting from that position. Like,
he shot like 39% last year.
What? That is a lie. That's
he
not,
did.
That's not a thing. There's no way.
Look it up right now.
I'm looking it up right now.
I will wait.
He shot 39% last year on how many attempts? Let's see here. On 2.7 attempts a game.
That's what I'm saying, dog.
But he's 32% over his career.
But you see what I mean? Like, whether they got like a Dante Cunningham type or a Luke Richard Mbamute, like, that would have been fine. Mm-hmm. Or if PJ Tucker stayed, I would have been totally fine with it. The problem isn't that Patterson left. It's the fact that not only did Patterson leave, PJ Tucker left, and they didn't replace anybody. That's the biggest problem they have. And that's fine. Like, I just want to say, like, yo, Patrick Patterson was a good soldier and a good player for the Raptors, but he's not – that's not what – if this team fails, it's not because they failed to replace Patrick Patterson.
Well, I don't think I can add any more to that. I don't think John could
either. I think the East just sucks, and there's going to be more leeway for the Raptors to be mediocre and to let these young guys get better.
Yeah, it gives an opportunity for a guy.
Assuming that the young guys are going to get better as the season goes on. I think that, yeah, there's going to be an issue with this team, the bench unit especially, with, like I said earlier, just like so many guys being experimented in so many positions and trying to find lineups that work. It's just going to be difficult, I think, but hopefully you hope that by the end of the season there's like a workable rotation and you've got your set lineup and the bench units that work the best. And like I said, I think the talent on this team, you'll find, you know, 8 or 9 guys who can give you a good playoff series or two.
Yeah. And maybe Siakam's giving you 8 and 5 at the power forward spot by the end of the year. Who knows?
Yeah, Patterson does like a lot of little things, but I totally agree with Harsh in that the lineups are good because Lowry is in the lineup. It's not for any other reason. I mean, Patterson sets good screens, but I don't know. Again,
like if you replace Lowry with like Corey Joseph, or you replace Lowry with DeLon Wright, that lineup is not as good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, or nearly as good. Yeah. It's like, I bet you it might even be a net negative lineup.
Yeah.
And when Lowry was out last year, I mean, DeMar DeRozan had to basically become Kobe Bryant for this team to win games.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to add. You guys have hit this. I'm really sorry to lovers of Atlantis at Girls Who Knows. We've eviscerated your question enough.
No, it's honestly. Not
thank
about
you for
that,
the question.
No,
I'm more upset at the Twitter handle. To be honest, the Twitter handle has me more upset than the question. so apologies for that. We appreciate the question and the listenership, and please don't go anywhere. A couple more questions. This one comes from Killa Pascal at Killa Pascal. He's got 3. I'm going to pick a couple of these because a couple of them are okay. Who gets Damari Carroll's Acer ad spot next year? John.
What? His what?
His Acer ad spot.
He had an Acer ad?
I have never seen it.
What? You've seen the Damari Carroll Acer ad. It was as common as the BMO basketball thing.
No, it wasn't. There's no way that's possible.
Okay, that's probably a lie.
Not this market, it wasn't.
That's probably a lie. I'm sending you the commercial for this now.
Dog, John was busy watching Dustin Byfuglien ads and shit.
None of these guys are on that. Oh, wait, that's not true. A lot of them, like, sell houses.
Okay,
it's all the white guys.
I'm gonna, hold on, go be quiet for a second. I'm going to play this.
And see I don't if it picks know. Up. Is it powerful enough?
I've never
well,
seen
whatever
this
lacks
ad.
In power it definitely makes up for in weight, though.
Shut up.
Well, whatever lacks in power.
Move out the way, little man. This is really what you want.
Is this an Asus ZenBook which packs unbelievable
wait,
power
man.
And a super slim design?
What the fuck?
This is hilarious.
Just like me.
Unbelievable power and be unstoppable. The Asus.
Just like me.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. That is a lie.
Yeah.
They need to like
everything about this is a lie.
The end of this commercial, they open a laptop. They need to show Damari Carroll faking a 3, taking 2 dribbles in and throwing up a 20-foot floater.
Or just when they open the laptop just breaks in half.
Just like me. Oh, poor
just
guy.
Give him crutches.
For the listeners, if that sounded awful on the mic, I didn't know John was going to play it right away when I clicked it. And it might have picked up both of the ads playing at the same time. I don't know. It might sound weird, but I don't really care.
Well, here's the thing. If you send me a link, I'm going to play it.
That's fair. Yeah, okay. I screwed myself.
It's going to be Bruno. Bruno's going to take over that spot because he's the new brick king of Toronto.
Plus, he's going to take that laptop to Ryerson and take some notes.
What's up, everybody? Halloween is over.
Over under for X Raptors getting a standing O at the ACC this coming season, and Killa Pascal set it at 3.5. Well, Patterson's definitely getting one.
Yeah, that's an under. I mean, it's not like the 20th anniversary.
Over under for X Raptors getting a standing O at the ACC this year. He set it at 3.5.
Oh. 3.5 is high, man.
Yeah, they only lost 4 dudes. Is Corey?
One of those guys getting a standing O.
Yeah. No way.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think it's under.
I mean, Carroll's a no. Patterson's a no.
I mean, it'd be disrespectful to give Carroll a standing O considering he can't stand himself.
They're going to throw roses at PJ Tucker, so that's one.
PJ Tucker's definitely getting one.
Just be a big bukkake from the crowd when he's in the middle of the court.
Just goes to show you.
Patterson might get one.
I can't believe I just said the word bukkake on this fucking podcast.
Patterson might. He might.
Yeah.
Has Terrence Ross come back yet?
He came back at the end of last year, I think. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So,
I mean, if I'm there, I'll initiate another one.
Who else is there?
Corey Joseph's going to get one.
Oh, yeah, Corey Joseph. Yeah. That's two.
I don't know if Patterson's going to get one. Yeah, I think at most it'll be three because Carroll's not getting one.
No, so at most it's three, yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for questions, I think. We've gone a little while here. We're going to come back on the other side. We're going to wrap things up with your favorite segment, our episode sponsor, plus a game of that random Raptors game. Stick around. We'll be back in just a second here on the headquarters. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Wilde here with John Godis and Harsh DeVay, wrapping things up here with your episode sponsor. And this week's episode of the headquarters is brought to you by Lauren Woods, who was a basketball player. He played 2 seasons for the Raptors before leaving for a season in Lithuania, before coming back to try to revitalize his career in 1 season with the Rockets. With the Raptors, he played a total of 72 NBA games, actually less than he played with Minnesota. Over the course of 2 seasons with the Wolves and from 01 to 03. But the Raptors, 72 games, he averaged 3.3 points, a career high for whatever team he played for, 4.6 rebounds in 14.4 minutes played. He started 30 games in the 2004-2005 season. That 04-05 season was trash. I think that's the Mike James season. I'd read a book just on that season, I think. It was so bizarre. That's the year Vince got traded too, right? Oh no, the 05-06 season was the Mike James. 04-05 was the Vince trade season, which I'd read a book on that for sure. Anyway, let's go to that 04-05 season. Let's find a game from Lauren Woods. Although, first of all, do you guys have any memories of Lauren Woods? Harsh, do you have any standout moments of Lauren Woods' illustrious Raptors career?
How many games did he play for the Raptors?
72. 45 in one season and then whatever adds up to 72 in the other.
Game. Where he had, like, I want to say, like, 17 and 14.
Holy fuck. Yeah, exactly that. That's the game we're doing.
I swear I haven't looked at it. But I remember this game because he dropped 17 and 14, and I remember being like, holy shit, we found the center of the future. Like, I legitimately thought that. I'm like, wow, this is our guy now. But yeah, that didn't amount to anything.
It certainly did not. No. John, do you have any standout memories from Lauren Woods' career?
I can't top that precision memory, unfortunately.
It's kind of fucking weird that you just called it back. So let's just go to that game, I suppose. This was Lauren Woods' best career game as a Raptor. It came in the second game of the 04-05 season. The Raptors beat the Detroit Pistons 101-89. Would this have been the defending champion Pistons in 04? Like, did they win the 04 playoffs?
They did.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, the defending champion Pistons.
Playoffs.
What's that?
They won the playoffs.
They did win the playoffs. So, yeah, against the defending champion Pistons. 101-89 win to move the Raptors to 2-0. Things were looking so promising in this 04-05 season before everything got really terrible. And Lauren Woods, like Harsh accurately pulled out, 17 points, 14 rebounds, 8 of 12 shooting. He had a block. He was a plus 10, 6 of 8, six offensive rebounds, 8 defensive, 1 of 1 from the line. He was really good in this game. He was a focal point of the Raptors' offense in this one. So in this game, 9 other Raptors played in addition to Lauren Woods, who started in center. Harsh, because you pulled that out, I'm going to let you go first, because that's way more impressive than like winning a coin flip or anything like that. So Harsh, you can go first. 04, the start of the 04-05 season, November 5th, 2004. And you have the floor.
Rafer Alston.
Damn it!
Yep. Rafer played 30 minutes, 13 points, 4 assists, 3 rebounds, 5 of 11 shooting, 3 of 5 from deep, and a plus 2.
The only guy I had. Vince Carter.
Yep. Vince played 31 minutes. He was 5 of 16 from the field, 12 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 1 of 4 from deep, and he was an even on the night. Harsh, it's 1-1.
Morris Peterson.
Morris Peterson, correct. He played 21 minutes, 11 points, 2 steals, nothing else. 2 of 4 from the field, plus 9, 5 of 7 from the line. By the way, I forgot. I've updated the rules to this game without telling you guys, and I apologize for that. I used this as the final championship round for trivia night when I did it over the summer a couple times. And the way it works now is you go back and forth. You get 3 strikes, and if it gets to the point where you have, where say it's tied, for example, and then the person who has 3 strikes went first, and the next person who has 2 strikes, they have a chance to win. If they get the 3rd strike and it's tied, then we go to sudden death where you just yell names until someone gets it. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. Sorry to clarify that after the fact. Anyway, John, your turn. It's 2-1 Harsh.
Jalen Rose.
Hell yeah. Jalen Rose played 32 minutes. He had 11 points, 4 assists, 2 boards, 5 of 8 shooting, 1 of 2 from deep, and a plus 1.
Chris Bosh.
Chris Bosh is correct. He played 38 minutes, 18 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 8 of 17 shooting, and a plus 3. That is the entirety of the starting 5. Bosh, Rose, Carter, Alston, Woods. So there's 4 bench guys left. It's 3-2 for Harsh. John, what do you got?
Tony Davis?
No, sir.
Oh.
Strike 1 for you. Harsh, you're up.
Lonnie Baxter.
No, that was a...
Fuck off.
A good attempt, but no. No Lonnie Baxter for this one.
It's a good guess.
Lonnie Baxter.
It's 1 strike each. Nice sound effects.
Marcus Banks.
No, Marcus Banks. This is a little too early for Marcus Banks.
Yeah, it is, I know.
I think he's backing up Steve Nash at this point. And doing so poorly, I might add. So that's 2 strikes for John. Harsh, you're up 3-2. What do you got?
I'm trying to think. There has to be a backup point guard. Who was the backup point guard then?
There is a backup point guard. That is correct.
God damn. It's not Mark Jackson, is it?
It is not Mark Jackson. A little too late for that. So that's strike number 2. John, if you get this wrong, the game is over.
Is it Jose?
It is not Jose. It's a little too
early. Damn, it's too early.
It's before Maurizio Gherardini came in and expanded the Raptors' borders. So Harsh, that's a win for you.
Baby.
Do you guys like this new format?
Yeah, it's good. It ends quicker.
Yeah. Plus, no, this is my favorite part. And doing this at trivia night was lovely. I get to read out the names you didn't get and hear you groan. So number 1 was Danielle Marshall. That good groaning. I'm very proud of the form there. He had 18 minutes. He had no points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and a plus 4. After that was Milt Palacio. Backup point guard. Yeah, he was so bad. 16.
He was so fucking shit.
Isn't he like one of the worst shooters in the history of the NBA?
Like, dude, I just have like vivid memories of him like bricking layups. Oh, disgusting.
Yeah, he had 16 minutes played, 9 points, 4 assists, 2 rebounds, 3 of 7 from the field. Yeah, it's like a career best for him. He was plus 11, tied for the team best in plus minus. Also tied with him for plus minus was Lamond Murray.
Oh my god.
Yeah, Lamond Murray, 16 minutes played, 6 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. Yeah, like I said, a plus 11, 3 of 8 shooting, 0 of 2 from deep. And the final guy, Matt Bonner, who, played 10 minutes, correct. 4 points, 2 of 2 from the field, no threes attempted, which is very out of character for Matt Bonner. And the Raptors beat the defending champion Detroit Pistons with that just wonderful box score in which no players were minuses. Vince Carter was the only one who was an even.
Was Ben Wallace on that Pistons team?
Yeah, it was Rip Hamilton, Ben Wallace, Tayshaun Prince, Chauncey Billups.
How the Sheed. Fuck did Lauren Woods get 17 and 14 against them?
No, Ben Wallace.
No goddamn idea. Like, and again, like,
but you see why I was watching that, and I was like, wow, we found ourselves the future.
Yeah, it's the second game of the year too, so exactly. Like it could be real.
Yeah, it must have felt like that. You know when Hassan Whiteside first started just dropping stupid numbers for Miami? That's what it must have felt like. Like, holy shit, we found this diamond in the rough out of nowhere. Yeah.
Oh, man. Man, that Pistons team is so good. God. They had Carlos Delfino.
They did.
I don't know if he's been an episode sponsor yet, but...
They also had Darko.
He did not play in this game.
He barely did.
Regrettably.
That makes sense.
Yeah. All right, that's going to do it, guys. This has been fun. I'm going to actually start keeping track of who wins these now because I have the actual sort of scoring format. I could go back in history and see who's won the most. I'm guessing it's probably Russell. Well, Harsh is pretty good in the more recent ones, I suppose. But I think I'm probably just going to start keeping track here. Thanks for coming on, you guys. Hopefully we can do it again soon. For programming note for people, this is probably going to be a bi-weekly podcast during this season. Just I got two, like, I don't know why I do so many goddamn NBA podcasts and no one listens to, but I do. And this one is going to have to take a bit of a back burner to the Locked On show. And also a new show that I'm doing with Mitch Robson, which will be through Hoop Talks. It's going to be a weekly NBA show, just covering everything that's not Raptors, pretty much. Going to try to have some fun with that one, so... stay tuned for the first episode of that one coming out on Thursday night. We're going to do over-unders for how many times we're going to watch teams on League Pass this season, and we'll go from there. And yeah, Harsh, John, anything you guys got to plug right now? Harsh, you can go first.
I can go first. let's see. You can follow me on Twitter at IamHarshDeVay. I have two other ventures that I'm a part of. One is my podcast I have with William Liu, who most people probably know. It's called The Defeated. You can find us at The Defeated Pod. We talk sports, culture, life, all that sorts of shit. And I also am a part of a soccer venture. So if you guys like soccer, you can check us out at New Ultras Media. It's mostly just soccer, except it's all banter. So we just talk shit about all the things that are happening in the world. World Cup qualifying was this week.
Oh, not that.
So check that shit out.
That's going to be fun, I'm guessing.
Yeah, so check that shit out. It's a good time.
John, anything you got to plug?
I'll be writing about JV this week for Raptors HQ and just more stuff on that site. I'll have a column this year ranking the young guys, I think. So that'll be starting up with when the season gets going. So, and I'm thinking about bringing back overtime. So we'll be doing that again this season, probably a lot more than definitely last year and hopefully the year before. So we'll be doing some post-game shows for HQ too.
Awesome, man. Looking forward to being with you guys all season, and thanks for tuning in, anyone who's out there listening. Once again, sorry for the... We'll try when I can to do it weekly, but I would expect it bi-weekly. Just too much shit on the go, man. That's the way it goes. But thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week with another episode, or not next week, I just lied, 2 weeks from now, probably, with another episode of The Headquarters.